down, 1 hour to go. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve. Follow us on Facebook, facebook.com/IllegalCurve. And the website is www.illegalcurve.com. Working on getting Bobby Holik on the line. He should join us in a couple of minutes to give a player's perspective, or a former player's perspective, but one who's very much in touch with the goings-on in the league as to what's happening with CBA negotiations. He's always a good guest. You can go to his website at holikonhockey.com is where you can find more of Bobby's insights on a day-to-day basis. Gentlemen, you know, give me a date quickly before Bobby Holik comes on the air as we're waiting. I think he's walking to his car right now. Give me a date.
Do you have him on GPS?
No, Remus is letting me know that. tell me when you think that the NHL season is going to start. Give me a date.
The day that it'll start? Yeah. I think the deal gets struck about a month after the September 15th, so October 15th, so the season starts probably, I'd say, November 10th.
I think it's going to be even shorter than that. I think the lockout's going to be 2 weeks. I think the lockout, like, we'll see hockey maybe October 25th, something like that.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
Let's welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show from holikonhockey.com. You know him from the New Jersey Devils, the New York Rangers, and the Atlanta Thrashers. Bobby Holik, good morning. Thanks for joining us.
Good morning. How are you guys?
We're doing very well. How about yourself, Bobby?
Excellent.
That's good. You know, I just asked my colleagues here this question, you know, about the lockout and sort of the start date and everything else, so I might as well ask you, too. If you do indeed think there will be a work stoppage, how long do you think this lockout will last, and when do you think that we're going to see NHL hockey return?
Well, initially, about 6-8 months ago, I really didn't think there was going to be a lockout. But now, closer to the date we get, September 15th or 14th, 15th, I think it's a better chance of it being a lockout. And I don't think the owners are looking at shutting down the season, but at least, because there's a majority of the owners is from the U.S.-based teams. And the October, November, December is ruled by the football, college football. Mm-hmm. You know, you have the Fall Classic, baseball, World Series. So there's really not that much attention being paid to hockey, so they don't generate the revenue they are generating after New Year's. Unfortunately, that's their strategy, that they are willing to give up the first few months of the season. And I don't agree with that strategy. No hockey fan does. But I think the feeling in Canada, or the sentiment, is much different than it is in the United States or the American US-based team, as I said. So I think we are looking at least 2-3 months delay.
Bobby, what do you think of the two proposals that have been presented by the NHL and the NHLPA? They've obviously been completely different.
Well, I don't really get too concerned with the proposals as of right now, because nothing gets done until it really matters. And up to this point, you know, negotiations are good, but it's more posturing. I've been through that three times, through a work stoppage, a strike in 92, two lockouts in 91, the lockout 94, 95, and, you know, 2004, 2005. So this is a lot of posturing, because nothing gets done until, you know, players and the owners start losing money or not making money. And unfortunately, it's all fiscally driven. That's what it is all about. This is not about anything else but money. And initially thought, you know, that the previous lockout led to a CBA that the owners were completely happy with. But more money you make, more money you want to make. And that's what I think the focus about all this should be on the owners. The players are willing to play. The players gave in quite a bit last time around. Now it's the owners. Emphasis on getting the bigger piece of the profit pie. And we cannot emphasize it enough that it's the owner's issue with themselves, especially. And that's where the decision making falls onto.
Bobby, you know, you talk about being part of past lockouts and being, I guess, you know, part of those discussions and negotiations as a player. Have you spoken to players who are currently part of this negotiation? And maybe can you give a little bit of insight into how these negotiations with Donald Fehr leading the way are different than the past, maybe specifically in 2004?
I have not spoken to players about the negotiations, but I believe I have spoken over the year or so about their leadership. And I think I feel as a former player and player who has been, as you said, through three work stoppages, mm-hmm. I would feel more comfortable with Donald Fehr leading the association than Bob Gudenow. I think he's the right man for the job and the only man for the job. And that is where my optimism lays with Donald Fehr, because he's a good negotiator, he's a smart man, he's an experienced man. So if there's a chance of them working on the deal, and I'm not talking about before September 15th, mm-hmm. I'm talking about next 4 to 6 months, it's because one of the main reasons is Donald Fehr. No, the rest of all the other parties haven't changed much. The owners are pretty much the same. The commission is the same. The players, you know, players are players. They want to play. So Donald Fehr is the new player in the game, and I think he's actually the most important player in the game.
Do you think we're joined by Bobby Holik here on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show? Do you think that Bob Gudenow was overmatched in 2004?
I don't think he was overmatched. I thought he just had a wrong approach after, you know, two successful battles with the league in 92 and 94, 95. I think he was coming from a position of strength that he really didn't have. And there was a little bit of disconnect. It's a long story. Make a long story short, there was a disconnection between sentiment amongst majority of the players and the PA leadership, you know, led by Bob Gudenow, and we never saw, myself included, that the strategy Bob had going into the negotiations was correct. So it was not a good situation, and I think sometimes too much success can actually hurt you.
We're joined on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show by Bobby Holik. He's a former player with the Thrashers, the Devils, the Rangers, and you can follow his work now on his website, holikonhockey.com. Bobby, you know, we were talking about this off air earlier. You know, the players don't get paid if they don't play, obviously. So that's one of a part of the leverage that the owners have. So, you know, how does a player balance the short term lost wages versus the long term salary potential in the course of their CBA negotiations?
No player in the National Hockey League should be expecting to get the, you know, to live that he needs the first paycheck come October once the regular season starts. All the players should be in a position, and they have been made well aware that this is a very good opportunity. So you really don't think about the fiscal part. What you do have to do is you have to prepare for the season like it's going to start on time. And if it doesn't, the hard part is to staying focused and staying prepared to start any time, at any given time, maybe with a two-week notice. And that's what the players focus is on, not necessarily when the first paycheck comes. That will come if you're ready to play and things will get worked out. So two things players do. They keep themselves in shape. They try to stay focused on being prepared to play at any given time and staying on top of the negotiations, communicating with the PA leadership.
Now, Bobby, as a player, they talk about successful organizations, and it starts from the top down, ownership, and then through president and general manager and the players. And if that's a tight-knit unit for the most part, and then you see if you're a player and you're really convinced this team's going the right direction, then you see an owner come back and just try and fight against every right a player has and you know, give a player a big contract and then go back into negotiations and say, we should do this, 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 and this. Does a player take that personally?
No, and you know what? There's very... successful organizations have a good working relationship between the management and the players. Mm-hmm. And when labor issues come up, usually the good, successful, long-term organizations, they're not quite as involved, you know, the general manager. It's usually the owners. There's a very few owners who are really setting the agenda. Mm-hmm. I don't think it's 30 owners. I think it's 4 or 5, maybe 6. That's just my speculation. I don't see all 30 owners having the same say in negotiations. So it's the commissioner, and maybe there's a strong group of a very few owners who are dictating the agenda. So I think when you look at teams like Detroit and stuff, they are balancing it just right. They have over the past few work stoppages, and they keep it all in perspective. Obviously, the ownership needs to do what needs to be part of the owner's team at the during the work negotiating, and the players are with the players. But it's not personal. It's just what needs to be done, and everybody understands that, or at least most people do.
Bobby, possible contraction in the NHL has been talked about before, and obviously nobody wants to see a team in Phoenix or a team in Florida leave, but do you think that the NHLPA and the players would be willing to see a couple of teams fold in exchange for possibly an extra roster spot on the remaining 28 teams?
You know what, I've been talking about the contraction since we had that dramatic expansion of teams in the mid to late 90s. I never liked it. I never liked 30 league teams. I would like to see 26 league teams, and I think it would improve the product. You put out a better product, you immediately generate better revenue. And I don't think it's necessary to have extra roster spots. I think, you might lose some jobs, but those jobs, it's the fourth line or players who should not be in the league to begin with, because there's just, I think, I always believe there's just too many teams, mm-hmm. and if you contract by two, for me, ideally, it would be 14. The league would be a much healthier, stronger league, and they would continue to generate greater revenue, but I don't think neither side is going to agree to that, because, some owners don't want to fold their teams, and Players Association doesn't want to give up jobs. But to me, better the competition, better the product. That's what I believe in.
I agree wholeheartedly with that. Bobby, we'll let you go on this last question. There seems to be a real issue between the wealthy owners and the poor owners, we'll call them, in the NHL. Is it incumbent on the players to exploit that void to their benefit in the course of these CBA negotiations?
I don't think that it's even possible, because, as I said, there's a 4, 5, 6 owners, group of owners who are dictating the agenda. And just like you have the leadership of the Players Association, hopefully with the best, at this time for sure, with the best interest of the whole group, whole organization in mind, I think that's the way it is in with the owners. Not so sure about it, but you would hope for it. For many of us, it's basically a kind of wait and hope situation, because we have no say and no involvement in it. So as a fan, as an analyst, and as a former player, I would like to see the players play. But the owners, the players, they all have to do what they need to do, not for today, but for years to come.
Bobby Holik from HolikOnHockey.com. Thanks very much for joining us this morning on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
Thank you.
Take care, Bobby.
Thanks a lot, Bobby.
Much. Let's go to break. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live on TSN 1290. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. A big thank you to Bobby Holik of HolikOnHockey.com. In case you missed any of that interview, it will be available for download on iTunes. Search for the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Subscribe and get a sent to your iPod each and every week. While you're at it, you can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve. Follow us on Facebook, facebook.com
/Drew.
Illegal Curve. And the website
off of my show
with the Winnipeg Jets morning papers is www.illegalcurve.com. Is this karaoke hour with Richard Pollock? I'll tell you what, you're in for a good night when Richard's out with karaoke and he's had a little too much to drink and he gets up there. What is it that you sing? Do you sing I'm trying to think what you sing usually. Is it the
Bruce,
Stones or Bruce?
It's
Bruce? Yeah.
Bruce is pretty hard too.
You are going to see Bruce in a couple weeks, are you not?
I am, yes. I'm going to be missing a show.
Yeah. I'm excited about that part more than anything. Richie Pollock out at Wrigley Field, is that right?
That's right.
We should do a live on location with Richie at Wrigley.
I don't know. He's got a checkered history in Chicago. I don't know if we want to touch on that.
The show's at night, so that would be odd and awkward.
If you're just at Wrigley for about 8 hours prior.
Yeah.
You could do a special Illegal Curve at night. Illegal Curve at Wrigley.
Yeah, I think we're good. I don't think Richard really wants to be on the show while he's rocking out to Bruce. Anyways, this segment is brought to you by David Carr of Monopoly Realty. Buying and selling a house is one of the most important and stressful life experiences. This is not an experience to be undertaken by yourself or left in the hands of a rank amateur. David Carr of Monopoly Realty takes the stress out of your real estate experience while you are secure in the knowledge that a true real estate professional is looking after your transaction. David Carr of Monopoly Realty, 230-6129. That's David Carr of Monopoly Realty, 230-6129.
David did a great job for me, but if you're a fan of the show, you know, support our sponsors.
Absolutely.
Right? If you're looking to buy something or sell something, give them a call. It's supporting us, and it's we appreciate it, and obviously the other sponsors that we have. Drew, you didn't, by the way, mention Bobby Holik's Hartford time on when you mentioned
drafted by Hartford.
I apologize. I must have.
Was he not part of the
dementia kicking in again?
What was the big trade again? Oh, what was the trade?
You should check.
Well, that's like early 90s. That's going way back.
It was a big trade. Wasn't he part of the Francis deal or something? I forget.
He might have been, yeah.
Let me see if I can pull it up real quick on
I think he only
on
played
Hockey
one or
DB.
Two years in Hartford, though.
Francis went from Hartford to Pittsburgh.
Yep.
I don't know. Anyhow.
I don't quite remember those days.
That's like 20 years ago.
Unfortunately. He was selected number 10 overall by the Hartford Whalers.
Yep.
That's offensive that you didn't remember that.
Well, I apologize.
I have to call him now and apologize.
You should have to. Yes, please do. On my behalf, you be sure to do that for him. Anyways, I can't find. I'll see if I can find the information later.
We'll get Reem to tweet it out.
Right. Yeah, Remus will figure it out and tweet it out on our Twitter page at Illegal Curve. Well, I want to spend the segment, or what's remaining of the segment after that meaningless banter, talking about some of the unsigned
free
agents.
If we didn't have meaningless banter, what would we have?
We would have just a.
He was traded to the Devils for Sean Burke and Eric Weinreich.
Is that when Sean Burke held out from being a Devil? Didn't he hold out for a couple of years and played for Canada's national team?
Yeah, that's a good memory.
You were in high school. You tell me.
I was not in high school. You look at the list of current unrestricted free agents. And, I mean, obviously the name up at the top of the list is Shane Doan. But, I mean, we know that Shane Doan is apparently going to be waiting and taking a wait-and-see approach until he turns 44 at this point in time. But you look after Shane Doan, and there are a couple players there. Most of them are sort of the grizzled veterans that have a little bit left in the tank, but not a lot. We saw one of those guys get taken off the list yesterday when Scott Hannon signed in Nashville for 1 year and $1 million.
Yep.
You look at the
like
list.
Ryan Suter, they're pretty similar.
Pardon me?
It's like Ryan Suter, pretty similar.
Players. Yeah, the same exact. I mean, Ryan Suter and Scott Hannon, they're just interchangeable, really. It's just filling that void seamlessly for the Nashville Predators.
Expect phone calls from Scott Hannon's family.
Saying thank you. You look at the list of the UFAs. Mm-hmm. You know, who jumps out at you right now as a guy who can really step into a lineup and maybe contribute more than the absolute base minimum?
I thought we were going to be talking about RFAs because the UFA market is not very good. I thought when I told you to put the show plan in, we were going to talk about the RFAs. Now I'm totally not prepared for this.
That's not surprising. But I mentioned on our free agents show, I thought Carlo Koliakovo could be a nice addition to a team. He can move the puck well. He can skate. Now, he's very injury prone. And he must be asking for too much money because as a useful player, he is a useful defenseman.
He's only 29 years old.
Yeah,
so
absolutely.
He's not like one of those. He's not, you know, you look at the list of the other defensemen, and most of them are these guys who really can't move anymore. You got the Kubinas and
Kubina's skating is a huge issue.
You know,
Dracena's skating is an issue.
Spacek.
Barker's skating is an issue. I mean, lots of you are exactly right, Drew. Foster's skating is an issue. A lot of these guys, their skating is really holding them back.
Exactly. Ezzy and I can beat them on the outside at this point in their careers, and that's not saying it, and that's not good for anybody.
But, you know, Drew, Jason Arnott, a guy who had been bandied about as and again, another guy who's not, doesn't move as well as he used to and isn't the player he once was. He was talked about as possibly being a fit in Vancouver. A guy like Mike Knubel is an interesting guy in that, you know, he's not what he once was, but he's good along the boards. He can fill in all spots. If you want to sign him to play fourth line and then put him to the second line with an injury, he's good. You know, he's not a guy who's going to make too much noise. That's a guy who could be a helpful player. I mean, there are helpful players up here. Again, you said most of them are on the downside of their careers. But, I mean, there are guys who can add a little bit, and it doesn't hurt to add a little bit. Now, you have a guy, some people can say, Christian Huselius. Now, I'm not sure if he signed overseas, but
he might have, I think.
Yeah, he's the kind of guy who's a selfish player, and you probably don't want him in the locker room, but a useful player like a Dominic Moore, a guy who's acquired every day at the trade deadline.
Mm-hmm.
Well, he can fill your fourth line center or your third line, depending on how much depth you have, kill some penalties, add a tad of offense. He can certainly enhance your speed element to your team. He's a helpful player, but it is pretty bare out there, and there's a reason these guys are hanging out so long.
Are you surprised a guy like Chris Campoli hasn't gone anywhere?
Well, I mean, he's
busy
guy.
With NHLPA negotiations.
And the reason I mentioned him is he's been very vocal, and he was very vocal earlier this week. I wonder if they might be putting a little bit of a blackball around his name in front office organizations.
I'm not so sure, Drew. I just think that Chris Campoli's product on the ice is lacking. He's a 6 or 7 guy. likely a seven guy if your defense is any good. He can move the puck and he can skate. He's terrible defensively.
It wasn't that many years ago. I mean, it was only 08-09 when the Senators acquired him at the trade deadline that people thought, hey, this is a really good acquisition. They got him from the Islanders.
You know, sure, Drew, possibly, but, you know, that awful turnover, if you remember, with Chicago against Vancouver to Burroughs there 2 years ago, and he's not great defensively, and if you're not that physical and your offense isn't that amazing, then you're going to have a problem. And if Marc Andre Bergeron has problems securing contracts generally, and he's way better offensively than Campoli. Now, Campoli's better defensively than him because everybody's better defensively than him, but I'm saying the offense needs to outweigh the defense, and Campoli sometimes doesn't provide enough offense for his poor defensive play to be overlooked.
Right, and yeah, he did. He definitely did not work out in Chicago. The remaining UFAs, I mean, yeah, we've gone over them, but the
but it's all slow guys. Colin White, Randy Jones, all these guys.
Yeah, Colin White didn't work out in San Jose and had injury problems. But a guy like Carlo Koliakou, who I agree, a little bit surprised St. Louis didn't keep him around, because when they were doing well last year, he was actually pretty good. Playing in top four times.
It's like you mentioned, it's like Richard said, he's an injury-prone guy, but anytime he's on the ice, and admittedly it's not as often as it should be, although he played 64 games last year, so it's not like you're getting 20 games out of him. Yep. He has performed.
Yep.
I mean, the Leafs, you know, you tell me the Leafs still going to use him on their back end?
He can certainly play in a top six role, and if that's a guy available. I mean, the one thing I can't get past really in this UFA crop right now, even Shane Doan slowed down, guys, is the biggest drawback of these players as a collective unit is their skating. And it shows you that the game is still moving towards a skate. Now, I realize LA, some bigger teams, and Boston, some bigger teams.
Yeah, but the LA guys still played fast.
That's right.
I mean, exactly. At the beginning of the year when LA was struggling, we said they play slow, they don't look fast, they have no foot speed.
A guy who scored last year, drew 21 goals in Peter Sikora, doesn't move as well as he used to. So he needs to be in an exact situation that makes it work. Now, I think New Jersey was a situation for him last year.
Yeah.
But, I mean, he was a guy who was in and out of the
roster. If the Devils aren't bringing him back, he's not coming back.
In and out of the roster, remember, for Tedenby in the playoffs, right? So, right. I mean, it wasn't a guy they thought that highly of. He did have his elements, and they did have some set plays off faceoffs to help. You know, he's got a good release and things like that. But overall here, none of these guys are going to be contributing too much to the cause.
Right. And when you look at some of these guys, I'd have to think that Kubina will get one more kick at the can.
If Philly's defensemen keep getting injured, they might bring him back.
Maybe he'll play defense. No, but a guy like him, he can still chip in 15 goals, and he's a leader and all that. But a lot of these guys, like a Pavel Kubina, you have to think like a team. You could use the Winnipeg Jets, even though the Winnipeg Jets are set on defense, but you have to look at a team similar to the Winnipeg Jets, let's say that, and are they going to give a guy like Pavel Kubina, who's probably going to make a couple million dollars, maybe more at this point, are they going to give him a roster spot knowing he's slower, or are they going to give that roster spot to a younger guy who they want to give that NHL experience? And I think at this point in the game, you know, we're mid-August here, getting towards late August. A lot of these guys, you know, that some of these guys that, you know, maybe teams were thinking about maybe putting an offer for, like a Kostitsyn, who I think he's going back to Russia.
That's the expectation.
Or a Huselius. Those guys most likely aren't coming back. But then, again, look at the Jets, who Kyle Wellwood was kicking around in September, and he turned out to be pretty good for them. So I'm not saying any one of those guys is going to be Kyle Wellwood and going to give really good value to a team. But I wouldn't be surprised if someone like that is signed. And I think we're not going to see too many free agent signings, especially UFA signings, for the next couple of weeks, because teams are waiting to see what's happening with the salary cap. Because let's be honest, a lot of these guys are guys you're going to throw $1 or $2 million at on 1 year contracts. Yeah. Most of the big UFAs, aside from Shane Doan, are gone. And you know,
I don't think Kuselis, by the way, is signed anywhere.
Well, so, like you said, if he's locker room,
but they say, well, it's not something they say so much. It's what I've heard is
bad work
ethic. So selfish, and so if anything's wrong with him, he's never sacrificing himself for the team, and that doesn't work well in a locker room. So that's an issue as well. I mean, again, you know, Alexander Semin, you talk about the offensive skill. If he has trouble getting a contract, well, I know obviously he wanted more money, but if he has trouble getting a contract of multiple years, imagine what a guy like Silius with less skill than Semin and a bad attitude and a bad history is going to have.
There you have it. So not a great deal of availability there, but you know, if you're really desperate, there are a couple of players that could still potentially perform. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live on TSN 1290. To the Illegal Curve Hockey Show for this Saturday. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve. Follow us on Facebook, facebook.com/illegalcurve, and the website is www.illegalcurve.com. The man chuckling to himself very quietly is Richard Pollock, the one staring at me a little awkwardly is Ezra Ginsberg, and I'm your host, Drew Mindell.
You know, Tim's playing a little dire straits here. You know, I think when the NHL and the NHLPA negotiates, they should have that song in the background.
Money for nothing.
Money for nothing.
So ironic. Or they should play Ironic by Alanis Morissette.
That would be more ironic.
That would be more ironic.
Yeah, that's good. I'm thrilled for
it. Why don't you just play it in the background of the entire segment now?
No, I think we're good. Nobody wants to hear that.
When the NHL and the NHLPA negotiate, is there like fire around everywhere? Like Gary Bettman, when he walks into the room, does he like walk into the room and there's just fire everywhere? And
no, he actually plays
like Kane?
He plays Vince McMahon's theme song when he enters the room. Yeah. Money, money, money. Or no, Ted DiBiase's theme song.
So funny because Gary Bettman. And the only experience I've ever had with Gary Bettman is when he was in Winnipeg. I forget which game, and I was doing an interview for I forget who I was interviewing, and he walked by me with a little bit of an entourage, and I like said hi to him. And he said hi. He's a really small guy. He's a very short guy.
Wow, is that a fascinating story?
I didn't say it was a fascinating story. I was just saying he's not an intimidating guy.
Give a slow clap for that one.
Did you think he was 6'8"?
No, I'm just saying we were joking and saying he was intimidating, and I'm just saying...
I don't think that height necessarily, stature is...
Didn't you cut him in the buffet line, Ezzy?
It's funny, a lot of dictators have been short.
Look, you're intimidating...
He's not a dictator!
That's amazing. You're intimidating... That's an amazing question. Let's start a new segment.
Kim Jong-il.
In the new segment this week. This week in NHL lawsuits, it might be a one-week segment, but there's a couple interesting lawsuits that are taking place in the NHL right now. The first one involves Danny Heatley, who's apparently lost a significant sum of money at the hands of his former agent-slash-business partner, Stacey McAlpine. Now, Stacey McAlpine is a Winnipegger.
I believe, yeah. Not in Calgary, but Winnipeg Ties.
Winnipeg Ties. He currently, I mean, suppose...
Hold on, he handles my money.
Well, you don't have any, so we knew there wasn't a problem to begin with. They supposedly now reside in Winnipeg and Kenora, and he used to be an NHLPA certified agent. He was Danny Heathley's agent, and there is a court case going through in Alberta, and you can read about this in the Globe and Mail, and we'll tweet this out right now on our Twitter page, at Illegal Curve, where Danny Heatley alleges that his business partner, his agent, and his agent's parents have victimized him to the point of losing, by the sounds of it, you know, more than $4 million. Now, you know, first of all, through a combination of bad investment advice and unauthorized withdrawals of more than $4 million from Heathley's bank account. Now, I know I'm not a millionaire and I know I'm not a hockey player, but the second I'm, you know, was Dan Heathley just not looking at his bank account ever?
I mean, we don't know, obviously, and it's all alleged right now, Drew, but if you the article is kind of odd in terms of the facts and the way everything happened, but
yeah,
one of the points in the article, they do say that he was guaranteed a return of blank. Well, I don't know many guarantees in the investment industry, so that seemed odd, but there was, you know, the players need to be, I think, on an ongoing basis, and I think Don Fair is probably talking about this all the time. You need to be aware of what's going on with your money at all times, and this is just a reminder of that.
Mm-hmm.
And unless it's you involved or somebody you have great trust with, and we don't know if these allegations are true or not, but you just need to be aware of it at all times and should be keeping a keen eye on it.
Absolutely. And you know, Danny Heatley's play on the ice has struggled.
Another guy who's lost a step.
And he's lost a step. Maybe this is part of it. I mean, the reality is,
the best
guys,
skater anyways.
In this day and age, you know, pro sports is a business. You hear that cliche ad nauseum. And, you know, when you're losing millions and millions of dollars, these guys make a lot of money, but some of them, unfortunately, get wrapped up in bad investments. And Richie's right. I mean, we were talking about this off-air when we were going to bring this up.
I think there is a difference between fraudulent activity
absolutely.
And bad investments.
Exactly.
Now, everything that, you know, this article is, you know, none of these allegations have been proven in court.
It's all good faith. Like, that's the question, right?
You know, this is all the statement of claim that'll need to be adjudicated in a court of law and determined. But it sounds like, you know, that, you know, Danny Heathley is trying to recover some of this money, and based on, you know, some of the, you know, the backstory and everything here, it looks like he's going to be out a significant sum of money. Now, fortunately for Danny Heatley, hopefully he's learned his lesson and he makes $7.5 million this coming year.
Right.
But and the following year.
And the following year. But to lose $4 million.
Well, maybe not this coming year.
You know, right. Yeah. You know, who knows about the lockout?
Well, and the reality is back to, you know, Danny Heatley's play on the ice and stuff like that. We remember what happened with Mike Modano's money issues. We remember what happened with Jaromir Jagr's money issues. It does affect you. Sure, these guys are making $7, $8 million a year.
Good point, Izzy.
You lose $2-3 million a year, it's that affects you. That affects you. And I mean, Richie's right. I mean, you know, when you're talking about, you know, financial advisors and financial planners, if you trust someone, and you know, from this article, we don't know, you know, the detail, the fine details, but you know, investing $1 million in condominium units and then it turns out that they were speculative and not, well, I mean, you got to know that when you're investing $1 million of your own money into something that has a slight chance of not working out, you have to know that. So obviously this is something that's going to play out, I imagine, for a long time in the courts. But you have to hope that, you know, it gets rectified soon, because Danny Heatley's at the, you know, at an age where he still has a lot of good hockey left and his play has been struggling. And, you know, now that Parise and Suter are there and all that, you know.
I'm not so sure that affects his play, Izzy. I mean, he couldn't do it.
I think he's lost the step.
With Joe Thornton beside him. And Koivu was obviously a great center, but he, you know, and he's a good passer, great passer. But, you know, if he couldn't do it with Joe Thornton, you have to wonder if he can do it on ice product-wise. Yeah. I think Danny Heatley's best days are clearly behind him, and I think his
next
contract will be significantly less than his current one.
Worth also noting that Danny Heatley has already been awarded a summary judgment, a default judgment, of $1.3 million that he won against NSEM Management, which was, I believe, what McAlpine's agency or organization was previously called when it was still active and in business. So he has won some amount of money. Now, whether or not he's ever going to get paid that amount of money is a separate issue altogether. You can win whatever you want, but if you can't find the guy to pay you, it doesn't matter at that point in time. I mean, now, a default judgment, Richard, you're the lawyer in the group. Boy, does that indicate that the person never showed up?
Let's not do legal talk.
Ask here. Richie legal questions.
Go to the next case.
Fine. The next case, we'll skip that case.
I'm still wondering why Richie came to my work with a subpoena.
I think that's just I think that wasn't a subpoena, Ezzy. That was a restraining order.
That was a bag of peanuts.
That was supper.
Yeah, that was a pita. That was a sub pita.
Not a sub pita.
Yeah,
okay.
Exactly. In Detroit, Ducks general manager Bob Murray is currently a defendant in a lawsuit.
I've never heard of this.
Well,
by the way,
we talked about this on the show a while back. Years ago.
This is years ago. This goes back to 2009. Where he is, the plaintiff is alleging that upon the Detroit Red Wings scoring a goal against the Anaheim Ducks,
this was
in a playoff game.
I think 2009. This is when the Ducks took him to Game 7. This is when Getzlaff and Perry were unbelievable. They dominated Nicholas Lidstrom that year, and they took him all the way to Game 7. And it was the third period where Detroit scored this big goal, and that was it.
And so the Red Wings score, and Bob Murray's upset, and one witness says, or the plaintiff says, that Bob Murray hit her with a chair, whereas Bob Murray just testified and he said he pushed two chairs out of the way in his haste to leave the press box at Joe Louis Arena. So again, you have two different stories. One, you know, involves sort of what it sounds like the plaintiff is alleging is that he swung a chair and hit her with it. That would be story A. And story B is he shoved a couple chairs out of the way and may have accidentally touched her with it. You know, both, we'll tweet out both of those articles as well. This one sounds a little bit. How do I want to put this?
Bob Murray's lawyer in this case is Bob Knight.
Bob Knight
from Indiana.
Yeah, I don't care. Oh, that was
because he threw the chairs.
Yeah, okay, that was a clever joke, I suppose, something like that.
Well, I could think you could hear crickets there.
Yeah, that was a bad joke there.
Let's wake up, guys.
Well, you didn't get the joke, Drew. So maybe you didn't get the joke.
As a general rule, if I don't get the joke, it means it's not a really good joke. If you have to explain the joke afterwards, it's not usually a good one. Anyways, this is going to obviously
Twitter at illegal.
This will go to trial. It's in trial right now. You know, the lady didn't have to go to the hospital or anything. Or when you're in a litigious environment like you have in the United States, it sounds like this might be a case where.
We have no clue. Again, we have no clue, but Bob Murray, I'm assuming, regardless of whether or not anything significant here happened, would probably want to take back anything that happened so there wasn't an issue, and of course that does paint his
organization in a bad light, and the issue in the States, in Canada as well, but in the States, they seem to really take, really go after these stories in terms of publicizing them. You know, it's interesting to them more so than the actual game themselves. So as a manager or a player, you obviously want to stray away from these so you don't have to draw negative attention.
Right. What are we talking about here? We're talking about 2009, Bob Murray pushed a chair and some woman is trying to get some money for herself by saying that he threw the chair. I mean, this is ridiculous.
We don't know what the truth is, so she's entitled to her day in court where she can prove her allegations.
I have a real hard time believing that Bob Murray threw a chair at a woman.
According to her testimony, hit her twice in the chest with a long-legged bar stool.
That did not happen.
Is this segment Judge Drudy?
Judge Drudy? If somebody hits me in the chest with a bar stool, I think that's called assault. You know,
right.
That's not a simple shoving a chair out of the way. That's somebody picking up a chair and whipping it with me.
Drew, like I said, I didn't know of this story until you mentioned it today, but I really find it hard to believe that Bob Murray, who has no history of this type of behavior at all, would assault a woman or by accident assault a woman. This almost screams a bogus claim to me. But again, I don't know the details of it enough.
And that's for the judge and the jury to decide. Let's go to break. When we come back, one final segment. It's rapid fire.
Judge Drudy
to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live on TSN 1290. One final segment for this Saturday. This segment is brought to you by Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club. For over 25 years, Rumors has been Winnipeg's home for the best in stand-up comedy. For a list of performers and showtimes, visit rumorscomedyclub.com. One final night at Rumors tonight. Deborah DiGiovanni, 7:45 p.m. show is already sold out. There are a couple tickets remaining, and when I say a couple, I mean a couple tickets remaining for the 10:30 show. Give Rumors a call, 488-4520, or hit up their website, rumorscomedyclub.com.
Rapid fire.
Earlier this week, there was a report that said from HC Davos in Switzerland, from their president, Godin Dominguez, that's a really difficult name, Dominguez is what it is, has said that both Rick Nash and Joe Thornton were going to go to HC Davos and play for them in the case of a lockout. Mm-hmm. Both those players denied that rumor.
That's where they played in 04, by the way.
Right, yeah, exactly. Right. What are your thoughts about when there's a lockout, NHL players going overseas and taking jobs away from the players that would normally fill those positions?
I'm fine with it.
Didn't realize this was going to be a geopolitical segment.
You don't even know what that means. These teams are trying to make money for themselves, and it's a star attraction. The player wants to keep playing. Again, I mean, sure, you're costing a guy a job, the 18th forward or the 17th forward, but that guy can find a job in another league.
Yeah.
And I'm not sure how big of a financial discrepancy there will be. And the fact of the matter is, generally speaking, these lockouts, aside from last time, don't take more than a year. So the player can come back if he's able to, or maybe he stays on the roster. I don't have any issue with this at all.
Yeah, I don't have an issue with it, but I'm pretty sure Rick Nash's agent denied it, right?
Yeah, he denied it, but you know, that's and a dollar or 50 will buy you a cup of coffee.
Yeah, what?
I'm just trying to do that math.
But the reality is, if HC Davos has the ability to get these players, it's going to help them win and all that. So I don't have a problem with it because these guys want to play hockey. They don't want to sit around and lift weights for a month. But not at all. I mean, these guys, think about if you're a guy that especially a younger guy or somebody that is coming off an injury. You want to be playing hockey. So they have to explore their options. That's what they're doing. I mean, it's quite likely that they've had conversations with HC Davos, and that might be on the back burner. I mean, what about if it turns out that the lockout is going to be 4 months? Yeah. Then these guys have to think about, okay, well, I don't want to all of a sudden one day in January know that now I have to, go get all of my hockey equipment and start getting ready for game time. They want to be in game shape.
And there's rumors that the PA is going to be touring in the KHL.
Well, that I'm okay with. I don't personally like the idea of them going to Europe, taking a job from a guy, he's planning on having this job for and then all of a sudden, because a guy
is... What if you're a fan of the team, and you can see Joe Thornton and Rick Nash play in person for 2 months, 3 months? What if you're the owner of the team?
I'm not disputing that point. I'm just saying, my moral compass says that it's a little bit off for a guy to come in, swoop in, take a job, and then dump out at the when his situation improves back in North America.
I understand the point.
Drew has a campaign platform, and he's running on that campaign platform.
Yeah,
he wants to keep jobs
that's
local.
More on the that's more on the management and the coaches to me than it is the player who's getting signed.
No argument there. Moving along, fresh off of a 1-goal-and-5-assist season in 22 games in the KHL.
Togliatti,
Alexei
right?
Kovalev has told the Montreal Gazette that he's working hard, training 3 times a week, and keeping in shape because he wants to return to the NHL. Kovalev, who is 39 years old, last played in the NHL in 2010-2011.
Yep.
You know, and he had 34 points with the Senators and the Penguins. Does Alexei Kovalev, do you think he can earn a spot in the NHL at the age of 39, 40?
No, and I think the problem is, just as we talked about, the other UFAs available, and I guess we can obviously add Alexei Kovalev to that list, is skating. And he was never the best skater, but he's lost a step, if not two. I think he's lost 2 steps. He just can't move out there anymore at an effective enough level. Now, maybe if you want to sign him as a fourth-line guy to come on the power play, well, the power play is different, and he can play on that in that role. But not many teams really employ that fourth line for specialty players. So if you sign him for that purpose and put him in your second power play unit, yeah, I guess you can get some value out of him. But anything other than that, I think, is a reach.
I agree, and I don't think Alexei Kovalev can come back like Jaromir Jagr did and make an impact. Jaromir Jagr, for a while there, was playing on the top line, and his play fizzled out. Obviously, towards the playoffs, he was a non-factor for Philly against Pittsburgh or New Jersey. But no, Kovalev in his last year with Ottawa was awful. Let's be honest, and he was making a lot of money, $4.5-5 million a year, I think. And he was basically going on his name at that point. And then Pittsburgh brought him back, trying to rekindle, you know,
exactly right.
old success. And remember, in Pittsburgh a couple of years ago, he was terrible in the playoffs. So if you're going to sign Alexei Kovalev to whatever you sign him to, you better be prepared for not much, because he's going to show you flashes. And at this point, really, he's almost just a power play specialist, a guy that's going to score a few goals, but nothing like back in the good years.
The Detroit Red Wings supposedly have inquired about the availability of the Phoenix Coyotes defenseman Keith Yandle. Mm-hmm. Previously, and last week you guys spoke about it, they had inquired about the possibility of acquiring Jay Bouwmeester from the Calgary Flames. Between Yandle and Bouwmeester, who do you think fits better with the current Detroit Red Wings lineup?
That's a really good question, Drew. I mean, you're talking about two different defensemen, and that Keith Yandle is poor defensively. Mm-hmm. And he's become better than he was, but still not very good. And he can move the puck really well. Bouwmeester can move the puck well, but not quarterback the power play like Yandle can, but he's better defensively, more reliable, never gets injured, all that stuff. For a long period of time, he's proven that. Yandle less so, but he can, they both can skate. And Bouwmeester's a beautiful skater. You're going to teach a player to skate, you skate like him. But Yandle can move out there too. I think if you're looking at what the Red Wings need, I think Bouwmeester actually fits in better than Yandle.
Agree 100%. Bouwmeester's a better defenseman. I mean, Keith Yandle, as offensive defenseman, he's up there. He's definitely an extremely good defenseman on the offensive side. But, I really like Jay Bouwmeester, and I've stood up for him time and time again, because I know Calgary Flames fans have been disappointed with him, and they maybe should be making $6, $7 million a year or whatever, and he's only been, producing 30, 35 points a year. But that's fine. Jay Bouwmeester, you're right, Richie, with his skating. He's better defensively than he gets credit for. So I think the Detroit Red Wings need an anchor for their defense. I don't think Keith Yandle can anchor their defense. When you're replacing Nicholas Lidstrom and it's in between those two players, I think that you would probably go with Bouwmeester, even if you're not going to get as much offense as you would from Bouwmeester as you would from Yandle.
I think Yandle, you have to protect a little more with his pairing, and maybe you put him, I don't know who you put him with, but a guy, if you look at that Red Wings defense, you're going to be working in a lot of young players, right? So as of now, unless they acquire one of these guys, but even so, Cronwall is your best defenseman right now, right? So how are you going to work in a guy like Yandle, and how much protection does he need, and who's going to be providing that protection, right? Because I think out of some of the other guys in this defense, like Erickson, they have their defensive lapses as well. That's why I'd err towards a guy who's stronger defensively. I mean, all the guys, Ian White, not great defensively, right? Erickson has his lapses. Quincy can be all right, but sometimes isn't great. And then you're working in Kindle and Smith. Yandle presents too much of an issue with it, causing his partner to be a defensive stalwart, which I'm not so sure they have necessarily.
Last question here on Rapid Fire. Willie Mitchell, it's silly season in the NHL, obviously. Willie Mitchell had his day with his Stanley Cup, mm-hmm. and he took it fishing and atop Mount Benedict in British Columbia.
Yep.
Richard, if you ever were to win the Stanley Cup, and Ezzy, when you inevitably win the Stanley Cup.
I'll be winning the Stanley Cup.
I know that. Where would you guys take your Stanley Cup if you had it for a day?
Ooh, that's a really good question. Caught me a little bit off guard there.
That's what I like to do. I like to keep things fresh and jumpy.
It would have to be something Winnipeg. Maybe take it to the Esplanade Riel Bridge and have a nip. Maybe eat a nip and then hoist the Stanley Cup on the top of the Esplanade Riel. Or maybe go on top of the Canadian Museum for Human Rights.
Say for the River Heights. Well, that's not done yet, so that would be weird. But the River Heights Cardinals, but that they don't exist anymore.
And the Cordon Comets. I have a problem with that name.
Save that for Cheers and Jeers. How about?
Cheers. Congratulations.
He's brilliant.
He's a good guy.
And jeers.
No, not good enough. He's a bad boy.
I never seen something like this.
Surprisingly not good.
Richie P.
We're going local. That's what I'm jeering. I was, that was.
We say this with a tongue in cheek, of course, because we are,
Are you going to jeer my performance on today's show?
No, I mean, the River Heights Cardinals are no more. I mean, that's a.
Yeah.
Part of our youth.
I was a Cardinal and I was a Sir John Franklin Explorer also.
Yes, of course. But that's just something about that.
I don't know why. Are they moving into one community center? Like, why was that?
Yeah,
why was that decision?
They're amalgamating all the community centers in the area into one mega community center.
No, that's a. Well, the name Cordon is terrible, and the name Comets is even worse. I don't know. Apparently, there was a vote on that. I didn't vote on that, but
I can't believe they didn't consult you.
I agree with Richie. We're all River Heights Cardinals at heart. So, well, Richie, or pardon me, Drew, you were more of a Tuxedo Express, though.
But I played for Sir John, and I played for River Heights. So back in the day, where you'd play for anywhere in the general vicinity.
True, yeah.
So your little Jimmy might be a Cordon Comet.
Yeah, that except there is no little Jimmy, just for the record.
That's your prospective child that
my
we talk
prospective
about.
Child
and we've
is.
Named him Jimmy just for our listeners to
exactly.
No,
I'll wrap up
completely.
Cheers and Jeers. I'm going to cheer.
I didn't cheer anybody.
Yeah, let me
finish. You thought that was your thing.
No, I didn't.
Go ahead. Quickly, we're up against.
I'm going to cheer in Crow's Nest, Alberta. They honored Rick Rippon. And Kevin BX is a good former friend of Rick Rippon. So it was very nice. They had a hockey game there, and they gave him a plaque on behalf of the NHLPA. So that's very nice. For Rick Rippon and his family.
I'll echo that cheer as well. That's it for this Saturday morning here on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. A big thank you to our guests, Chip Alexander of the Rally News and Observer and Bobby Holik of HolikOnHockey.com. In case you missed any of this program, it will be available for download on iTunes. Search for the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, subscribe, and get us sent to your iPod each and every week. Follow us on Twitter, at Illegal Curve. Follow us on Facebook, facebook.com/IllegalCurve. And the website is www.illegalcurve.com. A big thank you to our sponsors, Carbone Coal Fired Pizza, Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, The Cheer Bar and Grill, and David Carr of Monopoly Realty. Until next Saturday, for Richard Pollock, for Ezra Ginsberg, for producer Tim, and for Michael Remus, I'm Drew Mindell. If it's Saturday, it's the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.